Okay, so we're going to jump in again to the story of God, and a real quick review, a quiz. What are the, if you were to think about the timeline of the story of God that we know, that has been revealed, because there may be things before or after he's not told us what was before exactly, or what will come after. He's outside of time, and so we don't know. But what we know is what he's told us about this place, this time, the human race, this planet. And when you go back and review, what are the significant pieces? There's thousands of little pieces that affirm certain parts. But what are the big changes, the big stories that you think about? Let's go again through that. We'll be putting some resources in your hands over time, trying to highlight some timelines. But in your mind, what is it? Try to do it in order.
Creation.
Okay? The fall. The flood. The covenant, okay? Abrahamic covenant. Then what? What's that? Excellent. A little more specific. Do you remember who's that? Moses. Charlton Heston. Come on. Then what? What's the next big piece? The Davidic covenant, where there's some amazing promises. He promised a kingdom, and so then what was the next big piece? After he promised the kingdom, what happened? The kingdom came. The kingdom came, and then what happens? What's the big piece there? The church age and the establishment of the kingdom's expansion throughout the world. And then what happens? The second coming. He comes back and finishes the job, and then what happens? New heaven. New heaven. That's key. A new heaven and a new earth. And we get to experience what it was. Now, that's really good. How many feel like you could have done that without Edgar? Edgar, you wrote it down. How many could do that without Edgar? Chris, you could do that. It's not bragging, buddy. It's a straight-up question. If you can do it, it's okay. Those are really, really... Now, let's just get this real clear. Those are really, really simple facts. In and of themselves, we ought to know that. Not because they're important facts and, gee, look how smart I am, but because they all mean something. Those stories reveal things about God's purpose and intention and his nature. And his character and our nature and it helps us order our lives. If we're not clear about why, honestly, what we need to know about God, I think I could condense it. If it was just facts, it would be a very short book. Very short book. You know, if I just wanted to state all the critical facts, and somehow he's revealed it in this story of interaction with people and places and personalities and glory and failure. And there's something there. There's something that's to be revealed. And if we're going to hang on to not just the facts. Okay, let's all have a Bible walkthrough and all learn the hand signals and we can all remember exactly the order of all the significant things. If that's where we stop, it has little value. It will have little value because we have to understand that we're in that story. And that story has meaning to us. It is not revealing facts about a history. It is revealing a person with intentions. It's revealing understanding. And so all of those, every one of those significant events, and there's myriads of other little ones that reinforce those, but those are the big transitions. Those are the big transitions, the big periods of time. And there was something before, which is significant. And so we're going to try to unpack that over this next semester. We're going to show a video, John Eldridge. It's about a little under 12 minutes. Something I could probably do if I had more time, talent, intelligence, and resources. Anybody could do this. He did a really nice job. I go, why would I try to recreate? He really tees it up well. It's a really fun little video. And so we're going to watch that, and I just want to offer a few observations of application when we consider the story of God. Okay, so We ready for that? Want to hit the lights too, please?
I wonder what sort of story we've fallen into. It's been quite a journey for Frodo and Sam when the little gardener wonders this. Ever since they left home, they've encountered more dangers and more wonders than they could have possibly imagined. The battle on Weathertop, the flight to the Ford, the beauty of Rivendell, the dark mines of Moria, where they lost their beloved Gandalf. Their fellowship has fallen apart. Their friends are far away on another part of the journey into the shadow of Mordor they've come. Two little hobbits and their cooking gear on a mission to save the world. It's at this point that Sam wonders, I wonder what sort of tale we've fallen into. Sam could not have asked a better question. He assumes, first, that there is something larger going on. There is a story. And secondly, that they have been swept up into it. I wonder what sort of tale I've fallen into is a question that would help us all a great deal if we asked it for ourselves. Or you see, life is a story. That's the way it comes to us. It doesn't come to us like a math problem. It doesn't come to us like an IRS form. It comes to us like a story comes to us, doesn't it? Each day has a beginning and an end. There are all sorts of characters, all sorts of plots and settings. A year of our life goes by like a chapter from a novel. Sometimes it feels like tragedy, and sometimes like comedy, and most of the time like soap opera. But any way you take it, it's story through and through. As Madeline L'Engle says, all of life is a story. Now, this is helpful to know. I mean, when it comes to figuring out this life you're living, it would be good to know the rest of the story, right? You come home one night to find that someone has totaled your car. Now, all you know is that 2 hours ago, you gave it to your best friend or your teenage daughter, and now here it is, a disaster. Isn't the first thing out of your mouth, what happened? In other words, tell me the story, right? Somebody has some explaining to do, and that can only be done in hearing the story they have to tell. Careful now. You might jump to the wrong conclusion. Doesn't it make a difference to know that she was not speeding? That, in fact, another car ran a red light? Changes the way you feel about the whole thing. Thank God she's all right. Truth be told, you need to know the rest of the story if you want to understand just about anything in life. People are like that. If you want to understand people, you have to know their story. Why is Grandpa so silent? How come he drinks too much? Well, let me tell you. There was a battle in World War II in the South Pacific for an island called Okinawa. Tens of thousands of Americans died there. Many of them were your grandfather's friends. He was there, and he saw things he has never been able to forget. Oh, now I understand. See, as the novelist Virginia Woolf said, in order to make you understand, to give you my life, I must give you a story. Story is the way we figure things out. It's the nature of reality. It's the language of the heart. After all, what's the world's favorite way to spend a Friday night? With a story, right? A great book or a television show or a favorite movie? You see, it goes way beyond entertainment. Stories nourish us. They're a kind of food that our soul craves. We might know, for example, that life is a journey. But then we see what that journey will require of us by watching Frodo's story. We might know that courage is a virtue, but then we find ourselves longing to be courageous, having watched Maximus in Gladiator or Joe March in Little Women. As Daniel Taylor said, our stories give us all of our best answers to life's big questions and to most of the small ones as well. And here is where we run into a problem. Life, for most of us, feels like a movie we arrive to 40 minutes late. Something important seems to be going on, right? Maybe. I mean, good things happen. Wonderful things happen. You meet someone, you fall in love, you find that work, which is your joy to do. But tragic things happen also. You fall out of love, or they fall out of love with you. Work begins to feel like a punishment. Everything starts to feel like an endless routine. No wonder we keep losing heart. I mean, if life is a story, what is the plot? If God is telling a story, what is he up to? I mean, earthquakes and divorce and famine and abuse and just heartache? We begin to wonder if Macbeth wasn't right. Is life a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing? It's like we're holding in our hands pages torn out of a book. Now, these pages are the chapters, the days of our lives. We long to know that they're meaningful, but we've lost the context for them. We have no situation, no place for them to lie. We need to know the rest of the story. Okay, so you walk into any mall, any hospital, any university, amusement park, and you are typically met at once with a very large map and the famous red star and the encouraging words, "You are here." Okay. Now, these maps are offered to us as a sort of way for us to get our bearings, right? To orient ourselves to our situation. This is the big picture. Here is where you are in that picture. Okay, hopefully now you know where to go. You know what to do with yourself. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had something like that for our lives? Right? I mean, here is the story in which you have found yourself. Here is how it got started. Here is where it went wrong. Okay? Here is what will happen next. And this is your part. These are your cues. You can. You can discover the larger story, maybe not with perfect clarity, but with a whole lot more clarity than most of us now have, right? And that would be worth the price of admission. I mean, wouldn't a little bit of clarity go a long ways right now? Yeah, it would be gold. I want you to start with the movies that you love. I'm serious. Start with the stories that you love. Notice that all of them have the same ingredients, okay? Love and adventure and romance. There's heroism and loss and sacrifice. There's the battle of good and evil and insurmountable odds and a little fellowship that in hope beyond hope pulls through in the end. Isn't it true? Okay, you go back and you think of all the stories that you love. Sense and Sensibility or Titanic. You think of Braveheart or Gladiator or The Lord of the Rings, and then notice this. Notice that all the stories follow the same storyline. There was a time when everything was good, when life was as it was meant to be, and then something went wrong, and now a journey must be taken, or a battle must be fought. And at just the right moment, which always feels like the last possible moment, a hero comes to set things right, and life is found again. And we have never stopped to ask ourselves why. Why do we keep telling the same stories over and over again? We change the characters, we change the setting maybe, the period in history, we set it in galaxies far away, but it's the same story we keep telling ourselves over and over. Because all of the stories that we tell, every story that you love, every tale that's moved you to joy or to tears is borrowing its power from the real story, from the story of our lives, story of this world in which we live. And we've never stopped to ask, why those desires? Why do I have this heart within me? Why do men almost universally long for a battle to fight, an adventure to live, and a beauty to rescue? And why do women almost universally share a common desire to be fought for, to be pursued and sought after, to play an irreplaceable part in a great adventure and to unveil beauty? Could it be that the desires of our hearts and the stories that we tell are a clue, a glimpse, the secret to the meaning of our lives? They're telling us something about the real story, the story into which we were born. Look, if ever we did find the answer to the riddle of our lives, if we ever did find the secret to the meaning of the universe, wouldn't it come to us in the shape of a story? It would have to. Story is the nature of reality. It's the way we understand things. And it would also have to speak to our heart's deepest desires. It would have to move us, like the stories that you love move you. And yet it would have to somehow transcend them and capture them all up into something larger. Christianity claims to do that for us. Not the Christianity of Sunday mornings and good manners. That is not Christianity. I know it's what most people think Christianity is, but they are wrong. Dead wrong. There is so much more, and that more is what we've been looking for all the days of our lives, to find ourselves in an epic, something hidden in the ancient past, something dangerous now unfolding, something waiting in the future for us to discover, and some crucial role for us to play. That's the story that's written on our hearts. That's what Carl Jung tried to describe as archetype, or Joseph Campbell calls myth, but Ecclesiastes says that God has written eternity in the human heart. So tonight, I want to discover that story. Let's go back and get that epic for itself.
We may look a few more of those as we scatter through. He does a pretty good job, and does a fantastic job in the values and really thinking it through. But can you see how important it is, what the concept he's talking about? If we don't see that there's something bigger, that our lives are not just right here and now and all these big deals that we're facing, but there's something that we are a part of something. We're a part of something significant. We're part of something valuable. And the way it plays out often is how we deal with our life circumstances. What do we do with them? If we don't have that context of how does this fit in? What's God trying to produce in us? Do we see ourselves as heroes and heroines, even in our small things, for the young mom to heroically give and serve and bring life to babies and nurture them with an outcome that they're in the middle of something much bigger? The ethics of how we run a business is much bigger than what shows up on our taxes. It's a whole pattern of life that declares, do we understand how important our part of the story, when someone reads the book called Us, that we're in cooperation with it? Then we wake up, we're not bored. We wake up and go, oh my goodness, there's a battle to be fought today. And most of the time for me, that battle is sitting in the chair I'm in. It's my own flesh. It's my own apathy. It's my own whatever. But it's a noble battle. And if I lose sight of that, I just start giving in. I just say, well, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. When we understand how our life intersects with other people, we begin to put it all in perspective. We experience relationship. When we keep our eye on the bigger story, and so as we're walking through this, it's wonderful to have the facts in order. But what it tells us about God, what it tells us about His story, what it tells us about the end, what it tells us about the nobility of what we're doing, when we get all that in place, it will give us confidence. It will let us trust. It will let us walk through those places where we don't know that God does have an outcome that will please us. The final place will be pleasing and good and rewarding and blessing. Not that we never have that now, but if that's what we're trusting in now, we'll lose sight. We'll pursue it. How many have ever heard of the horse whisperer? Anybody not heard of the horse whisperer? Everybody understand what he is or what he does? Basically, he's a guy who completely revolutionized the way you bring along or tame a horse. Historically, it was this very adversarial relationship where you would jump on the back and just ride it hard till they just gave up. Just gave up. And he just started watching, studying horses to understand what motivates them. What kind of creatures are they? How can he get them to cooperate? Because by nature, some animals, i.e. cats, are not cooperative. They're not looking for, you know, someone to attach to, and to, you know, they're just different. But there's other animals that want to cooperate. They enjoy relationship. They want to somehow in their being, they want to please. A lot of domestic animals are like that. Horses, dogs tend to want to come along with you. And he discovered this process where he could get a horse just by the way he stood or the way he moved his hand to do all kinds of amazing things. Because he had relationship. He had built trust. It wasn't this, I'm going to beat you until you do what I say. But there was this trust. And by the way, if you've not seen it yet, I recommend it all the time. But it is a great movie. And it's a guy who learned from that guy. Okay, so I can't remember what his name is. But there's a guy named Buck. He's a contemporary. He still comes to Colorado and puts on displays. And you can bring your horses and he'll show you how to bring them along. Bring along your colts. And so it's still a very active thing. But anyway, Rick Whitney was telling me this story. I think it was the original guy. Was down at the Great Western Stock Show or whatever it is in Denver, that huge show. And in the main arena, this guy shows up with his horse. And he is just dazzling the crowd. Just dazzling the crowd, getting him to dance, back up, just do amazing things. And he has no reins. He's doing it all with body angle, his foot touch. He's just this, nothing's happening. It's just, it doesn't look like he's leading him at all. And yet, he's making this horse do all these tricks and just really responsive to him without touching him, without saying anything. And then he stands at one end, or gets him to one end of the arena, and he runs as hard as he can. Gets the horse just charging and just brings it up. You know, you see the horses when they're cutting or barrel racing. You know, that kind of horse. Explosive speed. And he stops about this far from the tall railings. And the guy says, pretty amazing, isn't it? I can do all that. What you don't know is this horse is blind. That's trust. That's trust. And I don't believe in blind faith. I believe in relationship that leads us to trust when we're blinded. When we don't see the outcomes. That we stay in step. When you understand God's story. And I shared this in Faith, I keep sharing it. One of the blessings of doing this for a long time, following Jesus for a long time, is I see 20-year stories, 30-year stories. I go, oh, that's what you were doing. Because if I'd have made a judgment at that moment, and I often did, God's not doing anything. God's not doing it. And that's what I love about Al Cross's story. It was a 40-year story. It gives me hope. God is doing stuff. He's doing stuff. And it gives us that perspective. When we put our story into that bigger story, it can help make sense where our life fits. And we're aware of our cues. When we're inconvenienced by something, we ask the question, this isn't what I had planned, but somehow the curtain opened and it looks like I'm supposed to step on and do something here. And our agenda, our story gets submitted to that, and we don't miss as many cues. We open our mouth at the right time. We don't see challenge or trial or hardship as something to just be disdained. Certainly we have to grieve it. It's not that I'm not think positive thoughts. Yeah, there's a time for grief. There's a time for fear. There's all those things. But we can rest in it and not be exasperated by waiting because God is revealing something in our life. The other thing that it does when we remember the bigger story, it gives us a much better perspective on the other people in our story. It gives us a much clearer understanding. When we understand what's really going on, it changes our view of people. In this family of faith, in our little journey, God has given us people that when we're thinking right, when we look, we can see they're broken. They're not quite all that God maybe would want. And there's situations where in that weakness we can see them and you know they can be all in all kinds of frames of reference, children, and that just they're never going to be what culture tells them they should be. What is our response to that kind of person? We treat them completely different. We treat them with patience. We treat them with kindness. We treat them with just delighting in them. We don't put high expectations on broken people. We let them just experience the moment and bear with them, and we're gracious and we enjoy and we celebrate with those people. We accept them and encourage them. We don't put those demands. And for those kind of people, it's never God's intention that we would burden them in our relationships with a yoke of perfectionism. I will love you if you perform a certain way, if you become something that pleases me or the world counts as valuable. We never put that expectation on those people. We're patient. We understand and we see the brokenness, and we love them deeply anyway. Not because we're naive, but because we love them. We respond with that compassion. When we see God's perspective on that brokenness, we can celebrate or grieve and delight in all those myriad of stories. Now, when you think of that kind of person that comes into our midst, I don't know who you think of, but I'm talking about me. I'm talking about me. Because that's who I am. I'm broken, and I'll never meet a standard of perfection. And I'm talking about every one of you. When we see God's story, when we hear people's story, we treat each other with tenderness, lower our expectations with compassion. We see little things that go, I know your story, and I know that was really hard for you. And so I celebrate it. I rejoice in it. I know your story, and I know how much it hurts you. I know it hurts you when that kind of situation happens, and so I respond with compassion. I refuse to put on the expectation that you have to perform for me to love you. And we find grace. And we find safety. We treat each other like the broken, incomplete people that we actually are. Instead of the demanding ways that we can do that. When we see data points instead of context, we make judgments. We get angry. We're frustrated. We get exasperated with each other. When we see the context that young people are in a process of developing discipline, and so we can grow in patience. Our kids, the foolishness is bound up in their heart, and we're not exasperated. We're not frustrated. If you just start behaving rightly, and then we transpose those same thoughts on one another. The story, the context, gives us patience. The way he starts the next little segment, he starts talking about once upon a time. Once upon a time. And when we begin to know each other's stories, when we start to hear how people have been shaped, and we grant them grace, and we treat them with the same compassion, the same lowered expectations that we would a special needs child. Because that's what I am. I'm a special needs person. I don't have it together. I'm never going to measure up. I'm never going to do it right. We can tell each other stories, and we can celebrate them, and we can bear with each other. And so, you know, once upon a time, once upon a time, there was a man named Chris. He had a great job, amazing job, successful. Stepped in, took on the yoke of shepherding the church of God. And nothing went like it was supposed to. Nothing went like it was supposed to. In health, success. And in that story, that man keeps fighting the good fight of faith. Keeps waiting on the Lord. When I understand context of what choices people make, things that happen to them. Once upon a time, there was a man named Matthew who was just a young man. And he declared somewhere in his soul that he wanted to see God in the land of the living. He wanted to see God move in his life. He wanted to experience supernatural things. And he began to pray. And there's lots of stuff that fight against that. And he just keeps praying. He keeps seeing God step him into cool things. Once upon a time. Every one of us have a story. Once upon a time, somebody grew up with a social anxiety disorder, and it's really, really hard to step into crowds and to conduct themselves in social settings. And they keep showing up, and they keep taking steps of faith. And if we treat them with the normal standard, why aren't you doing more? Why aren't you in this place? Why aren't you better at that? Why aren't you more successful? Why don't you make me happier by your behavior? And I put in the context of story. Once upon a time, there's a man named John Hook. A really hard, hard, hard childhood. And his life and his heart were locked down. And he fought, and he was honorable, and he did the right thing, and he found Jesus. And in his story, God moved him to this place where he came to the conclusion, I want to be God's man. I want to make a difference. And he stepped into his queue, and the world will change. The world is changing when we set our feet and open our mouths and we accept each other with grace. Why aren't you more this way? Why don't you do this? Well, we're all special needs. Let's lower our expectations and actually celebrate each other. It's a hard battle we fight. It's a noble battle we fight. But when we center our story and other people's story in this big context, the world will change. And every one of you have a story that has shaped you. You have no idea what shaped me. You don't know. Because you don't know much of my story. You know little snippets because I'm up here telling a lot of things about me. But you don't know me. Some of the brokenness is sin. Some of the brokenness happened to me. Can we grow in that patience? Can we grow in saying, God is doing an amazing thing in our midst? God is doing an amazing thing. Secretly, most of us would be much happier just being little isolated things, all behaving well, so our stories don't actually get on each other. If everybody just do the right thing all the time, we would be, in one sense, very content with that. And yet, God's story would not expand. His kingdom would not move forward. We have to embrace the whole of that. And that's how I really want to set this up. When we're talking about the Mosaic Covenant, it's not the years it happened or the process of how it happened. What is it telling us? What is God trying to establish in his story? And why is that piece important to what's happening in my life right now? What does it help me understand about people and about God? So I can contextualize all these things that are happening in other people's lives. So that's where we're going. And let me pray for us and pray we would increase our understanding of the story of God and a desire to know each other's story. Lord, I just bless you that you've not left us without answers. God, you didn't drop us in 40 minutes late. God, you've told us what's going on. You've told us how to interpret trials. You've told us how to maintain relationship. You've told us how to care for each other. You've told us what you want in oneness and an acceptance of each other. You've told us everything we need to know. You've told us, God, that this is not the end. You've told us it feels funny and horrid at times because this is not what we were made for. We understand it if we think about it. And it helps us, gives us hope. And I think of every story in this room. And there's pieces and parts that let me grow in grace towards people when I know their story. And I pray we would increase in that. And you'd help us become the people you want us to be, walking in your revelation of your nature and character and your salvation to this world. In Jesus' name, amen.